It's time to think big with Big Alaska Guests, Big Alaska Adventures, and no good lying through your tooth tall Alaska tales. It's the Big Alaska Show. Broadcasting from the studios of a remote cabin outside Bolchitna and streamed worldwide at KFQD.com with podcasts streamed at BigAlaskaShow.com. I'm Mike Ford with Uncle Steven, some Big Alaska Show friends. It's our continuation of the 64 Alaska Earthquake Special Edition of the Big Alaska Show. Featuring interviews with people who were there. Plus, we've got a tall Alaska tale. Designed to raise your spirits, not your blood pressure, unless you're a guy named Mike Ford. Good morning, everyone. It's the Big Alaska Show.
Good morning. Thanks for joining us on the Big Alaska Show. I'm Uncle Steve, and once again, here together, post-pandemic, with my good buddy and co-host Mike Ford. Good morning, Mike Ford, and I wish it would snow.
Oh, the weather outside is frightful, but this is so delightful. Yes.
It doesn't stop. Is this a record or
what? Well, we've over 100 inches of snow, Uncle Steve, this year so far. Now, that's after the wettest fall since 1989. So it kind of goes hand in hand, right? Because that rain turned into snow. So you had all that precipitation. But we were talking with Michelle at Alyeska, the concierge extraordinaire. Over 100,000 people have come to Alyeska this year. They are still sold out. And right now it's all about heli-skiing. Okay, wow. They're all sold out right now. And then I talked to Brandy over at Hilltop. They're not far behind. They had over 70,000 people.
Snow is good for the economy.
Yes, it is. And then, of course, they closed on the 2nd of April. They had to get some planned maintenance done, and they're getting ready for bike season.
Well, yeah, I know that snow is good for Alaska's economy.
And I'll bet you thought Jack Frost was nipping at your cottontail as you were hopping down the bunny trail on Easter Sunday, didn't you, Uncle Steve?
Well, yeah, of course.
You were absolutely right. It's the coldest stretch of air that we've had for Easter in over 40 years.
Oh, man. I've had enough, Mike.
I think we all have.
Everybody, you can see it on their faces. And, yes. and the berms are so large in this town.
How large are they?
How large they are. It's like they've moved the Alaska Range into town.
There you go.
Remember when we had Snowzilla?
Oh, I do. Now everybody has Snowzilla.
No, Snowzilla is not unique.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So how long before this stuff melts?
That's a great.
Ask Michelle that.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know. But the fun continues, you know?
At least
we have more daylight.
I dug out a Facebook Live of a show we did a few years back, and it was in May.
Okay.
And when we had the camera in the studio, if you look in the background, the trees had snow on them.
Oh, my gosh.
That was in May.
Okay.
You know,
well, that makes me feel better.
Yeah. Yeah, really. Well, anyway, last week we did our 1964 Big Alaska Show, special edition of the Big Alaska Show, and we had so many interviews that we wanted to extend it to this week.
Yes.
And last week, go to our website, BigAlaskaShow.com, because we have a podcast, including the scientist, a project manager from the Alaska Earthquake Center in Fairbanks, who talked about earthquakes and the changes that have been made since the 64. But one of the interesting things about that was I asked her, how close are we to predicting earthquakes? And she says, not much better than the last 20 years, but she thought that artificial intelligence might be the answer that can, you know, do that. So there's a positive. Right here in the Big Alaska, we have found one thing that artificial intelligence positive can do for our community. We also have a tall Alaska tale.
Ah.
And it won't surprise you that we don't provide an answer to it.
That's right.
But what we're going to...
Why don't we turn that over to artificial intelligence?
Yeah, right. They really will stump it.
I don't know that I'd want to hear their answer.
Actually, that's a really good point. So what we're doing is we're going to play the Tall Alaska Tale and have people email us their answers, and we will read them.
We will.
The following week, and might even provide an answer.
Okay.
If we can find one.
When did we get an email?
We've had one.
Oh, okay.
It's, you know, I mean, what percentage of it when you go from 0 to 1?
Right. 100%, baby.
I mean, marketing, we'd call that genius. Anyway, we do have a fun show today. And the other thing I thought about too, Mike, is that very few people in history experienced what they experienced in the 1964 Alaska earthquake.
That's true.
And we have firsthand accounts of people who were there, including Mary Doherty, which was over in the Pennies, which you can hear last week if you go to the podcast. And we do an extension of that for this week. Anyway, we've got a fun packed show here at the Big Alaska Show. But of course, Mike, we'd be remiss if we didn't start the Big Alaska Show out the right way. Folks, the key to doing a morning radio show, especially an early Saturday morning radio show, is a strong cup of coffee. And there's no stronger cup of Joe than Big Alaska Show Blend. The intense early morning coffee for intense early morning indigestion. That's why it's preferred coffee for scientists. Scientists have to think logically, something that doesn't happen naturally early in the morning. And they have to use deductive reasoning such as, it's morning, it's early morning, it's too early morning. Why are you doing this to me? Enter Big Alaska Show Blend to the rescue. Just one sip of this caffeine-packed pile and corpuscles and nostrils flare. Synapses fire in all cylinders and logic is immediate, telling people to leave you the hell alone. Problem solved. Bitter biting with a specific gravity of basalt. Big Alaska Show Blend. Intense early morning coffee for intense early morning gas.
Pour me a cup. Time to get up and face the world, my friend. Pour me a cup, I can't get enough of that Big Alaska Show Blend.
And that's how we roll here at the Big Alaska Show. But stick around, we have more Big Alaska Show coming up. And you can hear our show streamed and get podcasts at BigAlaskaShow.com.
And welcome back to the Big Alaska Show.
I'm Mike Ford with Uncle Steve. Our show brought to you in part by Neighbors Windows and Doors. They're Alaska's window experts for windows, doors, shower doors, affordable glass replacement. Neighbors Windows and Doors at 6251 Tunnel or online anytime at neighborswindowsanddoors.com.
And thanks for joining us on the Big Alaska Show. I'm Uncle Steve, along with my good buddy, co-host Mike Ford. And now last week and this week, we're featuring the 1964 Alaska earthquake. We spoke with people who were in the quake and shared their experiences. Here, Mike Ford caught up with Mike Janicek.
Michael Janicek was a cameraman downtown. And let's give a Big Alaska Show welcome to Michael Janicek. How are you, sir?
I'm good. Good morning. I'm enjoying a beautiful day out in the valley in Palmer.
Oh, nice. It's a great place to be when it's a beautiful spring morning. First weekend of spring.
And the ground's not moving.
That's a good thing. So you were a cameraman for what was then KENI television, is that correct?
That's correct.
So tell us how you came to be downtown on a good Friday.
Well, I was, like you said, a 15-year-old working at KENI, and I had been preparing for the news, which was at 6 o'clock, and so as you know, the quake was around 5:30, and so I had the flu that day and had not eaten all day, and asked my supervisor if I could run upstairs to Woolworths and get a milkshake. I thought I could hold that down, and he of course said, "Yeah, if I'd bring him one." And so I shot out of the control room, headed upstairs, And while walking down the street headed for Woolworths, by the way, the control room was in the basement of the 4th Avenue Theater building, the ground began to move a little bit, and my equilibrium started talking to me, and I thought, my goodness, I'm going to be sick again right here downtown on 4th Avenue. And of course, it didn't take very long for me to realize that it was not the flu that was making me feel that way. The ground was moving pretty violently. I actually was standing right in front of Adams Stationers at the time, and it was just a building down from Woolworths, which is where I was headed to get a milkshake. I saw the corner of the building separate, and that certainly got my attention. But shortly after that, the window on the building blew out like there was an explosion inside. And just shortly after the glass had fallen, there was still dust rising. Out of the window comes a young man, and being a track kid at the time, I thought, wow, perfect hurdle form for this guy. And then it dawned on me, like, hey, that's it, man. Run. And so I shot across 4th Avenue, went over to the federal building, but my trip across 4th Avenue was pretty exciting. One step was like stepping into a 4-foot-deep hole, and the next step, my knee was on my chin. And so anyways, I get to the fence there right in front of the federal building, and standing right next to me, there's a big, tall guy wearing a black watch cap, and I'm sure I looked a little terrified. I mean, the vision around me was pretty impressive, but he looked at me and said, "Don't worry, kid, just an earthquake," and that consoled me for a little bit. But between me and the street was a woman wrapped around a parking meter, screaming at the top of her lungs to repent, sinners. And of course, being a typical teenager, I had a lot of concern about that, and so after about 3.5 minutes, the quake kind of settled down. I mean, the vision around me was unbelievable. The road is the 4th Avenue looked like a raging Susitna River. I mean, there was big waves. I can see them going by, throwing cars around like Tonka toys, and the Westward Hotel, you know, was adding a new tower at the time. And so you could see it gracefully waving around up there, way up in the sky. Our TV antenna on top of the Lathrop building looked like a police car antenna. And I actually thought once, Mike, that gee, if I had a TV camera right now, I'd be a millionaire. But obviously I didn't, and so... Anyways, about 3.5 minutes in, it kind of settled down. So I shot off the fence, headed back to the TV station. It started shaking violently again. I ran back to the fence, and the big tall guy with the watch cap greeted me with, "I don't know, kid, this could be it." And, of course, I can't say anything more than I was horrified at the time. So it did last in the neighborhood of 5 minutes. It seemed to me it was about 5.5 minutes, maybe five minutes, 15 seconds. But when I left the fence and headed back, I got to the 4th Avenue Theater, and just then everybody was coming out of the theater. So that meant they had been in there the entire time. And it turns out there's a little side story about that. The manager was a high school kid because it was a matinee for the day, because it was Good Friday, kids were out of school, and he stopped everybody from running out of the building.
Wow.
Because it could have been, you know, it would have been horrible.
Yeah.
In the dark in there, and so he stopped them all and told them, "Please wait until it stops. You're safe in this building." And so he let them go after it stopped shaking, and they all filed out of there, but they all, of course, looked pretty rough, crying and eyes wide open. Anyways.
Wow, hard to tell how many lives he saved by doing that, isn't it?
No, that was an incredible thing that happened. And it certainly was one of those tiny little things that, in a sense, was unnoticed. But I heard about it much later. I actually met the guy that did that much later. We were sharing stories about the earthquake, and he was the guy inside the theater that stopped everybody. When I got back to into the TV station, my boss asked me to take a quick trip down 4th Avenue to D Street, cut across, check out Penny's, and then come back and tell him what we saw. And so when I did, when I got to the piece on 4th Avenue that had dropped down, there were people walking around down there like they were having a party. One guy even said to me they were partying down under. And so, but when we got to Penny's, what we saw there made quite a bit more somber feelings in that you could see certainly there was injury and maybe even deceased people in there. It was a pretty awe-inspiring sight to see that building crumbled up the way it was.
Just amazing. And what will you be doing when the anniversary happens, Michael?
Well, I'm going to come to the function at the museum. You know, when things like this happen to you, you know, I didn't realize it at the time, but it gets etched in your brain completely. There are details about what happened that I'll never forget. Now, certainly I recited the stories to high school classrooms in that I was a high school teacher for 27 years many times, but when a event like that takes place in your life, all of these little memories get etched in your brain completely, you just never forget them. So I want to meet up with others and share our stories, so I'll be there, and we're changed. All of us that were there, when an earthquake happens, I leave. I'm going to take my chances with the cracks in the ground and head outside. The sight of crumbling buildings is not where I want to be in the next earthquake.
Michael Janicek, thank you so much for sharing your memories with us today.
You bet. Thanks for doing this. It's important to all of us that were here during that time to recognize the impact of all of what took place on that day.
And welcome back to the Big Alaska Show. I'm Mike Ford with Uncle Steve. Our show brought to you in part by Alaska Enterprise Solutions. They're your authorized sales agent for Xerox in Alaska. Call Mike Ferris or visit him anytime at aesalaska.com.
Welcome back. I'm Uncle Steve and co-host Mike Ford. We're featuring the 1964 Alaska earthquake. We had the show last week, and we had plenty of interviews with people who were there, and so we thought we'd do a two-part series on the 64 Alaska earthquake. Don Hartman was a geologist, and in fact was a good friend of my uncle, who was also a geologist at the time, and I met Don singing Barbershop years ago and didn't realize he knew my uncle until about 3 or 4 years later. Joining Don on our show was Ken Young, who worked for the gas company at the time.
Please give a warm Big Alaska Show welcome to Ken Young and Don Hartman.
Yay!
Hey, like that audience, guys. Don, you were in the earthquake in 1964.
Yep, I was there.
You were there, and you were a geologist.
Yes.
This must have been a ball for you.
Well, after about a half a day, it was.
Where were you when this happened? About 5 o'clock. This happened. In fact, I'll pull up the. I can tell you the exact.
I think it was 5:36.
Really, Ken knows this too. So, where were you at 5:36, March 27th, 1964?
I was in the middle of West Northern Lights Boulevard, hanging onto the door handle of my truck.
Were you driving somewhere at the time?
I was pushing my neighbor's car, trying to get it started. And we were interrupted by the earthquake.
Was he in the car at the time as you were pushing it?
No, we both got out. I was afraid the front car was going to end up upside down.
Was the first thing just the shaking, or did you hear noise?
There was noise all around, but it was just shaking, and it got stronger and stronger. And I jumped out and held onto the door handle, and I was looking east on Northern Lights, and I could see waves coming. And every wave that came, the trees swished back and forth.
Was this like cracking a whip kind of thing?
Pretty much.
Yeah,
pretty much. Yeah, it just whipped the trees back and forth as each wave came by, and you could see the waves coming in the street. And looking out at the houses, my house was 50 yards away, and I couldn't get there. It was just, they looked like boats in the water.
Oh, my gosh. So
there were no horizontal lines, no vertical lines. Everything was just fluid.
Now, do you remember looking down the road and seeing other cars?
No, it was pretty much deserted.
Well, in 64, there wasn't that many people, you know, like there is now.
Yeah, there were about one-third of the people that there are now. Yeah.
This thing went on for, like... They say 5 minutes.
It seemed like at least 5 minutes. And then, of course, there were aftershocks that went on for hours afterwards.
Yeah, yeah.
Strong aftershocks.
And, you know, let's bring Ken Young into this, too. Ken Young, you were an employee for NSTAR at the time.
At that time, it was Anchorage Natural Gas,
okay,
yes.
Anchorage Natural Gas. Where were you at 5:36, March 27th, 1964?
I was in my kitchen. I had just gotten off work, and it was Easter, Good Friday, and I had three small children, one, two, and three. I was getting ready to go down a block away to the store to get something for dinner when it hit.
Now, where'd you guys live?
We lived right on the corner of 12th and I had a two-story duplex. And just adjacent to the old Providence Hospital, of which there was a chasm that zipped through there.
Yeah. Now, what's the first thing you remember when this thing happened?
Kind of like a roar of a freight train that got louder.
Did that sort of precede the
That preceded the shaking? The shaking. I, originally from Southern California, and been through lots of little earthquakes. And I yelled to my wife, "Hey, did you feel that?" And it got aggressively stronger, threw us down, couldn't stand up, couldn't open the doors to get out of the house.
I can't imagine what it would be like to be in something like this. I mean, I've been in earthquakes that were like 5-something. This thing, they said it was 8-point-something, right, Don? But then they revised it to 9-point-whatever?
9.2.
Yeah. Which is, now you're a geologist, Don, that's 10 times each Richter scale is 10 times stronger.
Yeah, each tenth of a point is about double. So it's huge. It's just unimaginable.
Ken, did your duplex survive the...
Right. The only thing that, short of twisting a lot of nails and stretching the place, the only thing that we lost was a part of the chimney that protruded above the roof.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of the house was fine. The wires came down and were laying across the road or across the backyard. But we still had electricity and still had gas, and until the gas company shut everything down across town, not knowing what the potential damage was.
Now, for a lot of people, this was during the Cold War, you know, Russia and the United States on stuff. A lot of people thought this was it. This was the end of the world.
Oh, I knew it was.
Yeah,
I mean, not from a bomb or anything like that. I just had a feeling that this was it. This was the end of the world.
Mm-hmm.
No doubt in my mind whatsoever.
Don, you were a geologist, Don. You were fooled by this stuff. I mean, you know it was an earthquake.
I was fooled quite a bit. I mean, I looked to the north, and a dense stand of spruce trees wasn't there anymore. I mean, it was gone.
You were very close to...
We were on the edge of the Turnagain Slide.
So did you see stuff drop off?
Yes, we did. Yeah, about 10 minutes after the earthquake stopped, we watched our neighbor's house disappear. It just sank right down and disappeared. It sheared off the garage in the process.
Were they in it?
The slide was still going on. I don't believe they were in it by that time.
Yeah.
The slide continued for another 15 or 20 minutes after the earthquake.
Don, you did a stability chart. As geologist, you were hired to do a stability chart of the Anchorage area after the earthquake.
Yeah, most of the geological community got together, and we mapped the entire city, the network of fractures and cracks.
So you were mapping cracks.
I was a crack mapper.
You were a crack mapper. My old man's a crack mapper. Yeah. Where Ken Young's house was, or where his duplex was, which was on 12th and I, Is that a more stable area than?
No, that was the L Street slide. That happened just west of the Captain Cook Hotel.
We're talking about where now known as the Inlet View Towers, which were the L Street apartments. Yeah. Ken, you were watching. Did you get to see the L Street? I've always heard the stories of things falling down and.
Yeah, when we finally got out and got the kids in the car, because of the protection of the cold, the shake was over at that time, but people were still hanging out of the L Street apartment screaming. The fascia, the concrete covering the rebar was off on probably a quarter of the building that had fallen down, but the tower was still there.
Well, I'll tell you, man.
I don't recall it moving. I don't. You know, a lot of people said, well, they could look down the street and see the telephone poles flipping back and forth. I don't recall that. I was too concerned with getting my family out of the house.
Mm-hmm. I bet you that was an ordeal to get out, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
Because everything's twisting, doors jam. I mean, you can't get out. How much damage was in the inside your house? Dishes
inside,
and stuff like
that? Yeah. Everything that was liquid in the cupboards fell out on the floor and broke. It was a mess.
What did you guys do as soon as the earthquake was over? Don, do you remember what you did?
Well, I ran right back over to my house, and my wife was 8 months pregnant with our third son.
With Doug.
With Doug.
The guy that sings in my quartet, the Frozen Pipes. That's right, Dougo. This explains it.
And
so Doug went through the earthquake, too.
Oh, yeah, he did. He doesn't remember much, but he was there.
Really? So you go back, and your wife, Dee Dee, what was she doing?
Well, we were just trying to assess what was happening. Like mm-hmm. I say, our neighbors' houses disappeared. The forest disappeared. And the earthquakes were still going on. They were coming every half hour or so.
Is that, oh, right.
Yeah.
After all the aftershocks. Were they pretty strong aftershocks?
Yes, they were. Some of them were pretty stout.
Pretty intense. Did you ever get, as a geologist, because you know about seismology kind of activity and stuff like that, did you see what any of the Richter scale ratings were on some of those aftershocks? Like 6
oh,
or 7?
Oh, they were up to 6 in that neighborhood.
That'll chatter your teeth.
Oh, yeah.
As far as communications, I mean, what'd you guys do?
There were no communications. The police sent around people warning them to get out because there was going to be a tidal wave coming. And, of course, there never was. But everybody packed up and moved out to the other end of town and just stood around wondering what was happening.
What about water?
No, our water in Turnigan was cut off. They came around with water trucks. And
okay, that's what I was wondering. So was this National Guard stuff?
Yes.
Okay. Ken, for you, what'd you do once you got your family out?
Well, once I got the family out and transferred over to a sister-in-law's house that lived out in Spinard, I went back to work. And we ended up on 12-hour shifts that really ended up 16 hours. I would come back to their house. They had a lazy boy. I'd climb in it, sleep 8 hours, and then go right back to work.
But now, gas was turned off for...
Gas was turned off all over town because we had no idea what the potential damage was on line breakage. Mm-hmm. There was some. And my job ended up going around town, relighting the equipment and the houses and that.
One of the guys I went to junior high and high school with was injured. They had a gas explosion in their home. And did you get reports of explosions of gas?
There were several of them there, as well as fires.
There's something like there was like 131 people killed in this. A lot of it, which happened to be because of the tsunami, Don, that you're talking about, outside of Alaska. But I was just amazed there weren't more people killed in Anchorage.
I think the total number of people killed in Anchorage was something like 16 from falling debris. And
yeah, I remember the woman in Penny's. As far as gas explosions, I was surprised that more people weren't killed in that.
It was very fortunate.
Now, I remember you talking to me, Ken, about there were a lot of ham...
There was a few ham operators around. The telephone lines were virtually... What were up and running was dedicated to the military and the emergency only. We had a gal, I can't recall her name right now, that was the newscaster that basically got out and said Anchorage was devastated, everybody dead.
See, that's the news we got down when we were living in Texas.
Right.
My mom's brother lived up here, and so Alaska was gone and destroyed. there was no internet. I mean, there's no kind of communications other than talking to each other. I remember you told me you sort of wheeled and dealed with one of the ham operators.
On relighting the equipment house to house, going house to house at the time, one was a ham operator, and I refused to relight his house, turn the heat back on until he got word to my folks down in Southern California that the family was okay.
Neighbors Windows and Doors not only performs high-quality replacement window and door work, we also manufacture and supply for new construction. If your contemporary project needs a 20-foot-wide, 10-foot-tall door to capture the view, we can do that. Or if you're looking for windows with huge glass and a slim frame to complement a modern design, or trying to find an energy-efficient window system that can come in a black interior and black exterior finish, we can do that. For expert advice and great service, visit Neighbors Windows and Doors, 6251 Tunnel, or visit neighborswindowsanddoors.com.
These days, when it comes to investments, there's a lot of mistrust and skepticism. Many people feel the stock market's rigged. And then there's an even larger population that thinks that those people may be right. But at a time when investment cynicism is at its highest, it's nice to know there's one investment company that understands. Ad Nauseam Investment. You see, at Ad Nauseam Investment, they've heard all the horror stories. Investment brokers with ulterior motives who had more concern for covering their own failing investments than watching your bottom line. But Ad Nauseam Investment is transparent with no ulterior motives and with this simple guarantee. They'll take your money. Plus, now you can save time with Ad Nauseam Investment's unique process. A process that asks only one question. Did you bring your money? So, if you find yourself looking for someone to handle your investments, think Ad Nauseam Investment. Visit moneyhole.com. Ad Nauseam Investment, where your financial concerns come first, right after hours.
And welcome back to the Big Alaska Show. I'm Mike Ford with Uncle Steve. Our show brought to you in part by Alaska Enterprise Solutions. They're your authorized sales agent for Xerox in Alaska. Call Mike Ferris or visit him anytime at aesalaska.com.
The 1964 Alaska earthquake generated thousands of stories and tales. And one of the things we like to do in the Big Alaska Show is play one of our all-time favorite games called
Tall Alaskan Tales, Tall Alaskan Tales. No good lying through your tooth, Tall Alaskan Tales.
Now, this is how this works. We tell an Alaskan tale, and you tell us if you think it's a truth or a no-good-lying-through-your-tooth tall Alaska tale. Mike Ford, please tell our listeners our disclaimer.
We're able to win our own prizes, and we usually do.
As we look back on the Great Alaskan Earthquake of 1964, lest we forget, there was a time that science did not provide the explanations, but rather legends to explain this earthly shaking phenomenon. In ancient Greece, people believed that the god of the sea, Poseidon, caused earthquakes. When he was angry, Poseidon would strike the ground with his trident and set off an earthquake. His unpredictable, violent behavior earned him the nickname Earthshaker. In Hindu mythology, Earth is held in place by eight gigantic elephants, all balanced on the back of a turtle, which itself stands on the coils of a snake. If any of these animals shift or move, an earthquake occurs. But perhaps the most peculiar is a legend from Sweden, where a giant wheel was rolled around by the devil, and every time he rolled it, the earth would rumble and shiver from its immense weight. Is this the truth, or a no-good-lying-through-your-tooth tall Alaska tale?
So, what do you think? Is this the truth, or a no-good-lying-through-your-tooth tall Alaska tale? Go to our website at bigalaskashow.com and email us your answer. We'll read responses on the air next week and provide the answer. One of the interviews that is a classic for us is with longtime Alaska broadcaster Herb Shainlin. And Mike, you worked with Herb as a producer for a very popular radio show called
Desperate and Dateless. Not only did I help him with that one, I would fill in as a guest host. And you talk about a fun time, man. This is Friday nights from 10 to midnight. This is back before the internet,
yes. Right?
So people have a few cocktails and they're forgetting that they're live on the radio. And some of the stuff that was coming out, I'm going, they kind of know that this is live on the radio, yeah. Don't they?
Did you have any kind of delay at all?
Yeah, there was a delay, but it didn't seem to matter.
Yeah. Well, I'm talking about you'd had to catch the stuff, though.
Yeah. Okay. So I'd have to be there with my finger on the button if I had to do stuff. But, yeah, that was crazy.
Did Herb give advice to those who were desperate and dateless?
Oh, yeah. Of course. As only Herb could do.
What kind of advice would he give these people?
He'd tell the ladies to run. You know, because the ladies would always get the phone number, right?
Could this show air today?
It would be fun. I think it could air today.
Yeah.
I really do. I think it would be, it might be a video show, though.
Yeah.
People okay. probably zoom in. It'd probably be online more
yeah.
than it would be on the radio. I don't know.
Late night. Herb had come to Alaska in the Air Force and was on the air when the earthquake hit. In fact, Herb and another legendary broadcaster, Ron Moore, they were both on the air. And this is Herb's account.
I was on the air of the Armed Forces radio at the moment. I sat there waiting and hoping for that needle to stop. And of course, it seemed like it never did. When it did, I got up and ran out of the studio, smack into a door that had been open 15 or 20 minutes before, and fell to the floor, owning a Class A uniform. I thought it would never stop working, and I couldn't leave because as long as you're on the air, you don't get up and walk out. But the room was shaking, the building was shaking, the town was shaking. Eventually, the needle stopped, and I got up and ran. I saw concrete buildings writhing as though they were serpents. I didn't know concrete buildings could do that. And it never occurred to me that this was an earthquake. I thought, because earthquakes were not in my frame of reference, I thought they had dropped the bomb. Not until after the whole thing was over and I had finished watching the buildings writhing and telephone poles snapping back and forth, the wires swaying, and I didn't see a mushroom cloud, so the only other thing that it could have been was an earthquake. I was kind of busy because Armed Forces Radio and Television is a pretty cushy job. And I figured the reason that I had benefited from all of this soft military service was because in the event of a problem, I was supposed to get that station back on the air and talk to the people. Don't forget, it was 5:36 p.m. Everybody in the station had gone Friday. Everybody in the station had gone home at 5, except for an Air Force sergeant, who once was an officer but had been passed over for promotion, so he'd been demoted to sergeant. So he wasn't too intrigued with the idea of doing his duty. But I figured we had to turn on that generator and get back on the air. Now, every time we had had a disaster drill at Armed Forces Radio, we had had to call the engineer to come in and start that generator, which was outside, just outside the studio, because it never started. So I said to the sergeant, look, let's try to start. You know darn well it's not going to start, and we don't have to go back in and broadcast. So we can at least say we tried. So we went over to the generator, and I pressed the red button, and it started like a Rolls Royce. Absolutely.
And that was our friend, the late Herb Shainland, who would remain in Anchorage after his Air Force career to become a well-known flamboyant broadcaster in Alaska, both in radio and television. He also emceed the Polar Bear Jump-Off in Seward for the American Cancer Society, When his health began failing, he handed that honor to us on the Big Alaska Show, which is where the show started 17 years ago. So, that's our show. The 1964 Alaska earthquake is a major event few witnessed. But we're the fortunate ones because we're able to hear firsthand accounts from those that were there. Although Alaskans had several different experiences, they shared the common knowledge what time the quake hit and where they were at the time. And yet, Alaskans rose above and beyond to rebuild Alaska into a new future. Truly the big Alaskan spirit. And to my baby girl, love you, and Mike Ford, why don't you take us out as you so eloquently do?
All right, Uncle Steve, we want to thank Bob, Mary, Mike, Don, Ken, Tim, Dina, and Herb for joining us. We also want to thank you for listening, and we want to thank our sponsors. Neighbors Windows and Doors, Alaska's window experts at 6251 Tuttle, or online anytime at neighborswindowsanddoors.com, and Alaska Enterprise Solutions. They're your authorized Xerox sales agent for Alaska. Visit them anytime at AESAlaska.com. Remember, if it's Big Alaska Guests, Big Alaska Adventures, and no good line through your tooth, Tall Alaska Tales, it's got to be the Big Alaska Show. Have a great week, everybody.